Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our 2025 interim results presentation. Nice to see lots of familiar names and faces on the line. For those of you who haven't met us, I'm Stuart Neal. I am the CEO of Boku. To my right is Rob Whittick, our CFO. We are going to focus the majority of this presentation on the numbers, which I'm sure most of you will be glad to hear. We're going to keep, to some extent, our powder dry because, as you probably know, we have a Capital Markets Day coming up in just over a couple of weeks. I will talk a little bit more about that later in the presentation. Before we dive in, I guess at a summary level, we're really happy with the numbers that we have posted in the first half of this year. Strong numbers, growing, profitable, cash generative, continuing to make inroads into the market and gain share as we expand largely with our existing customers, but also in the background, as we have signaled consistently, been making sensible investments in infrastructure and also starting to seed new go-to-market activities and also new product development. All of these are things that are going to be covered in more detail at the Capital Markets Day. Without further ado, I'm going to pass you over to Rob, who's going to walk you through the H1 numbers. Rob.
Thanks, Stuart. Good morning to everyone. Pleased to be here to present our 2025 interim results. The first six months, as you will see from our trading statement, have been exceptionally strong for Boku, with revenue growth of over 30% and adjusted EBITDA increase of over 50%. A performance that underscores the strength of the business, which gives us confidence in the guidance that we've already given and supports our continuing strategic investment. As you can see, all of our headline numbers continue to trend in the right direction. The Boku network continues to attract more users, and we are processing ever more payment volumes. These metrics, together with a consistent underlying take rate, continue to drive growth in both revenue and adjusted EBITDA. Turning firstly to our key operational metrics, MAUs in June 2025 are up 20% half on half, with new users added to the Boku platform in the first six months, up 11%. Two main factors behind the growth. The first, continuing global shift towards LPMs as more consumers move away from traditional payment methods. Second is the increasing number of connections between LPMs and merchants globally launched by Boku. In the first half, we launched 60 of these new connections. Whilst user growth is evident across all of our products, digital wallets and A2A continue to outperform, with new users for these products up 38% and MAUs in June up 44%. These increased user numbers have in turn translated into increased payment volumes, up 28% half on half. Our take rate too has increased for the period, although this is largely due to the effect of launch phase pricing. On an underlying basis, the take rate is consistent half on half. These strong operational metrics have driven a 34% growth in revenue. Within this growth is $3 million of launch phase pricing, which we do not expect to repeat in H2. Excluding the impact of this, revenue growth was 27%. As noted, we continue to see significant growth in digital wallets and A2A schemes, with an 89% growth in revenues half on half, or 61% on an underlying basis, excluding the launch phase pricing. As in all periods, we've seen strong ongoing cumulative growth from our existing connections. For example, Blik, which was launched last year but has scaled significantly in the first half of this year. We've also delivered a number of new connections in the period, notably in EMEA and APAC, including multiple connections for a new global design merchant. These products now represent 36% of our total revenues, or 32% excluding the launch phase pricing, up from 25% in H1 2024. At the same time, DCB continues to perform strongly, with an increase of 15% half on half. As you'll remember, our DCB product has two parts, which we have split out clearly in our interim report: DCB payments, where consumers make purchases via their mobile network operators, and DCB bundling, which we will come to in more detail shortly. Within that overall growth of 15%, DCB payments has increased 9%, with continued geographic expansion of our connections and strong growth in subscription levels for our merchants. And DCB bundling has increased by 70% half on half, again underpinned by new connections, with our digital media and entertainment merchants being significant users of this product. To pause on bundling, as an example of this, when you renew your mobile phone contract and are offered a subscription, Spotify or Netflix as examples, free for a trial period, Boku provides the technology to integrate these kinds of promotional offers into the payment flow. TP fees have grown at 69% compared to H1 24, and as noted, revenue grew at 70%, and bundling now represents over 10% of group revenues. We do see meaningful scope for expansion in this area, given our significant mobile network, mobile carrier network, and our deep merchant relationships. Turning to adjusted EBITDA, we've seen a 53% increase to 21.8 million in the first 6 months and an adjusted EBITDA margin of just over 34%. In the period, we've included currency conversion costs within adjusted EBITDA. These currency conversion costs are expenses we incur when converting merchant funds to the chosen currency of receipt for them. This activity, for the first time, is a material expense and has been included to match with associated revenues now in adjusted EBITDA. On an underlying basis, excluding launch phase pricing, but including these additional costs, the margin remained above 30%, in line with our previously announced guidance. And we do remain confident that we can maintain greater than 30% adjusted EBITDA margin as we continue to balance growth and investment. In terms of investment in H1, it's centered around product innovation initiatives, currency conversion and money movement capabilities we've talked about, and a new innovation hub in Singapore, which is focused on ideas that will shape the next generation of payments. And in addition, we do continue to invest in operational efficiency, specifically automation and straight-through processing, as we continue to build a platform capable of scaling materially. Boku delivered an operating profit of 11.9 million compared to a small loss in H1 24. And the bridge, as you can see, from adjusted EBITDA to operating profit can be primarily explained by charges relating to share-based payments of 5.1 million and depreciation and amortization of 4.2 million. Turning then to how Boku's profitability is translating into cash, our own cash, which, as you know, we consider to be a fairer representation of our true cash position as it excludes merchant and issuer balances. This our own cash has increased 9% in the first 6 months. And just turning then to how Boku's profitability is translating into cash, our own cash, which, as you know, is what we consider to be a fairer representation of our own cash position as it excludes merchant and issuer related balances. This, our own cash has increased 9% in the first 6 months. And if I exclude the share buybacks of 12.3 million, the increase would actually have been 24%. Our group cash, which does then include merchant and issuer balances, has increased 8% in the first 6 months. And as previously signaled, we do expect our group cash balances to reduce over time as we look to accelerate settlement times to our merchants. And finally, the group continues to remain debt-free. At the year end, we improved our balance sheet disclosures and now looking to provide a little more detail on free cash flow. The analysis here shows that we're seeing free cash flow conversion of approximately 70% in the first half, and we would expect the seasonality of the business to impact positively in H2. The bridge from adjusted EBITDA of almost 22 million to free cash flow of 15 million can be primarily explained by adjusting for net normal working capital changes, and these do exclude merchant and issuer related balances, and then capitalized investment in software as we build the platform to deliver more connections to meet the growing global demand for LPMs. The free cash flow of 15 million ultimately translates into the increase in our own cash in the period after adjusting for various inflows and outflows, including the share buybacks and the interest we have received. All of which results, as you can see, with an own cash balance of 87 million at the end of the period. In summary, looking at our progress over the last 6 months, the business continues to grow well. We continue to generate profits and an adjusted EBITDA margin over 30%, and we are generating cash. A positive set of results, which supports the guidance we gave in March. And with that, I will hand back to Stuart.
Thanks, Rob. And I guess just to underline a few points that Rob made there, and hopefully this makes everybody's life a bit easier on the line in terms of disclosures, pulling out of the exceptional revenue, the movement of currency conversion above the EBITDA line, and the expanding of the disclosures on cash flow, hopefully will make everybody's life a bit easier and, create a higher quality of earnings that we are now reporting. So let me just summarize. Very, very happy with our financial performance and the business momentum in the first half of the year. Particularly pleasing to see the robustness of our DCB payments product that continues to grow and the rapid expansion of our LPMs, especially digital wallets and account to account. All of that, frankly, being driven by adding new connections, largely for our existing customers, but also, as Rob indicated, some new customers coming on board. And that gives, additional proof points to our longer-term strategy of widening our merchant base and our direct sales go-to-market initiatives. We are now looking to put more investment into product innovation. We will double-click on that at the Capital Markets Day and give you a bit more insight into that. And at the same time, we continue on our multi-year journey to transform the back office and create operational scalability across our platform. So a very pleasing first half to the year and a very balanced set of progress. So looking ahead then, I guess, on our guidance, very happy to reaffirm the guidance that we had previously given, particularly around a minimum revenue growth rate of 20% on a compound basis. We are always at pains to point out that revenue in the business is not always linear, given whatever connections or customers are going live within a given period. There might be a waviness to the growth, but clearly, as you've seen in the first half of this year, we've had a very strong performance. And so 20% and above CAGR for revenue. And, whilst we continue to make sensible and appropriate investments in the business, we recommit to delivering over 30% EBITDA margins into the future. And that's with the readjustment of our foreign exchange or our currency conversion cost to being moved above EBITDA. So again, we recommit to the previously given guidance on a financial basis. And as I have indicated a couple of times, we have a capital markets event coming up. So we will be looking in a bit more detail here around, where we see the market opportunity, just underlining some of the things that we've talked about before and going a bit deeper into the market opportunity. And then importantly, how Boku will play in that space, how we intend to win, what is our strategy from a commercial perspective and our go-to-market initiatives that we've been investing in, and how we go above and beyond our existing merchant base, within which there is still a vast amount of growth potential, and we add more merchants to that. We've created what we believe is a market-leading and a phenomenal platform with which to grow, and we're going to go into some detail on how we intend to exploit that. So very excited. Hopefully you will be able to join us on the 16th of October for the CME. And with that, I would like to open it up to questions. So Tim, over to you.
Well, thank you very much, Stuart. Thank you very much, Rob. For those who would like to ask a question, you can indicate to me, ideally using the raise hand function. We'll come to you individually. So, Hannes, you're first with your hand up. Please proceed.
Thanks, guys. Got a couple of questions. Maybe the first one is, can you maybe slice your growth a little bit in terms of customer penetration You talked about 60 extra connections. How many of them are basically from new customers? You also announced two new large customers. How well is that ramping? So maybe that's actually a couple of questions in one. And then also one thing stood out at H1. You reported just two customers over the 10% revenue threshold. That's half of what you had 1 year ago. Maybe you can just talk about the moving parts, how those business relationships have developed.
Yes, certainly, Harris. Thank you for the questions. In terms of new connections, I guess the 60 new connections we've launched, I would say those split, not perfectly equally, but broadly speaking, 50-50 between DCB and A2A and digital wallets. In terms of the new customers we've brought online, I would say 15 to 20% of those relate to the new customers. So we have onboarded those new customers this year and got going very quickly with them in terms of launching connections. And both of the two, there are actually three new customers, but the two we've mentioned have got going very quickly. And then in terms of your point around customer penetration, as you say, we've gone from four to two. We've also gone from those four customers generating 69% of the revenue to the two generating about half. So not only are we diversifying the customers, we're diversifying the products, and we continue to diversify the products with money movement and currency capabilities. So we become more and more comfortable, not totally comfortable yet, but more and more comfortable that we have diversified on many vectors and continue to do so, and will continue to do so through the rest of this year and into next and beyond.
And then maybe the last question is just like in terms of this FX product. FX product, you mentioned now you have incurred costs of it. Is that now fully utilized, or are there any further developments necessary? And I know that goes a little bit into the capital markets day, but just like thinking where this is ramping, and maybe you can put that 1.4 million and the guided 3 million cost for this year in perspective with, let's say, the benefits generated out of it, and how should we think about that going forward?
I would say, as we said, this is the first period where we consider it to have been a material cost, and the revenue associated is also meaningful to us. So I think it's the start of a journey. As we look at bringing on board customers, we definitely consider where the cross-border opportunities are, because those are opportunities for us to support our merchants, but also opportunities for us to look at the fees we would earn. So I think we're at the start of that journey. I do think for the full year, it will be a cost of something in the order of $3 million. So it is ramping up now. And so I do think it's an early stage opportunity, Hannes.
Thank you, Hannes. Oliver, you're next.
Brilliant. Thanks, guys. I just want to ask a quick one on headcount growth. So the momentum through the first half, how does that look going into the second half of the year? Is the hiring rate likely to be a similar rate, or slower, or quicker? And are you still finding it easy to get the correct talent from the talent pool?
Shall I yeah. talk to that a little bit? Yeah, I mean, look, I think this year we have definitely been adding to the talent pool across the business. We brought in some very, very smart folks from varying companies around the world, people from Worldpay, from Bank of New York, from Wise, to, you know, there are a whole raft of companies in the tech space, and they are starting to add to the mix and help us to, you know, realize our potential. You know, that's going to take some time. I would expect as we exit this year into next year, the hiring rates will start to slow. We are at that pivotal time where we are bringing in knowledge and expertise, which means typically hiring more senior folks to help you figure out where the future lies. I think that changes over time once you get to some critical mass. So I think this year has been a year of significant hiring, but it doesn't continue indefinitely at this rate. It starts to slow from next year.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Roger.
Yep, hi guys. Thanks for taking the questions. First one is on bundling. Just you said that could be meaningful over the medium term or something like that. Can you sort of quantify that a bit more, please? What could that look like? And is it addressable across the whole merchant base, or is there particular areas where it's more applicable than others, you know, digital entertainment as opposed to physical e-commerce? Or just thoughts on that would be really helpful, please. And then the second question is, you talked about in the statement some direct sales investment. I understand that's costed within existing guidance, but broadly speaking, you know, who are you, what's the number of people you're planning to add there, and what sort of types are they when it comes to sales and marketing, please? Thank you.
I'll take the bundling one if you... Yes, so bundling, we do, as we've said, Rog, grown very strongly in the first half. We expect to see that continuing in the short term. I do think it will continue to grow. As I said, we have got a breadth of mobile network operators and a breadth of merchants that will be interested in how they work together to promote both sides of the equation. And I do think that will continue to grow into the future. I think not at 70%, Roger. It will be a lower number than that, but we do expect growth as we move forward.
Yeah, and then just to address your point around direct sales, I mean, it's a little bit early to tell where this tops out, you know, so we're at that sort of phase at the moment where we're still scoping. We've brought on 3 sizable merchants in the first half of this year, which is a good proof point that there is, you know, ample demand out there. We've done our initial scoping of the market, which looks like the top of the funnel is around 300 to 400 names. And we're really going to be fishing in that pool of adjacent verticals around our current expertise in digital and streaming. So think of anything that has a sort of tokenized subscription element to it. And that will be interesting to us. So, you know, software, online travel, advertising, these are the types of sectors that we're going to look at. We still need to do a fair bit more proofing on that before we say, okay, it needs 50 salespeople or 10 salespeople. And that's really what we're going to start looking into in the back end of this year, so that we have some people on the road in the early part of next year, and then we will grow it appropriately. What we're not going to do, Roger, is just go and herd in 100 salespeople and see how we get on. You know, we've done quite a bit of thinking and planning about this in advance.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Roger. Tom, you're the next one with your hand up.
Hi, Stuart. Hi, Rob. Just 2 from me, if I may. Not to eat into capital markets today, but maybe pick on what Hannah said earlier. Just in terms of currency conversion, you said it's early days. It's in 30 plus currencies. Have you got any metrics or data points that suggest that you've got a strong initial uptake from merchants? Anything more that suggests that, you know, there's strong growth initially?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. I mean, I think about the money movement side of things in 3 phases. The first one is, you know, we've always been in this space, but somewhat reactively. And so, you know, historically, we would send different currencies back to merchants, but we would allow the issuers to do the conversion and they would send us dollars. So step one in all of this is to build our own banking infrastructure so that we can inject ourselves into that flow, so that we can insist on receiving local currency and owning the conversion ourselves. So the reason we can now post the cost to the P&L is the fact that we can measure it, whereas historically we always struggled to do that. It was somewhat opaque. So now that we're in control and we're owning the currency conversion flows, we can now be a lot more proactive in pricing those services into merchant contracts. It can help us win business, particularly in some of the more challenging emergent markets. So sort of step one is to get ownership and get the cost of conversion down. Step two is about getting a bigger share within our existing merchant base by using currency conversion as a hook and an advantage in the market. And then really the world is our oyster beyond that point in terms of using it as a standalone opportunity. And you know, to your question about existing merchants, we have found demand in all sorts of places within our current customer base of people that have money stuck in various countries. Sorry, Tim. Okay. Yeah. So basically, Tom, you know, there are three bits to this. We are somewhere in between sort of, you know, midway through part one and starting to do part two. And then there's a whole lot of runway ahead of us.
That's great. Thank you. And just the second one, $10 trillion prize is quite sizable. We're already seeing interest from some of the card players. I know PayPal launched their own strategy back in July. What are you hearing from your merchants when you engage with them? Is it sort of they'll have one preferred LPM partner, or is there room for two or three in this market as it matures?
I think it's likely, as it did over time in the cards world, that people will be multi-sourced. I think it makes absolute sense in big markets for people not to have just one provider of any payment method. We haven't seen that yet. So, you know, I would say two-thirds of our customers prefer to work with one provider predominantly in each market. Some of our merchants use us as their kind of preferred global partner. And there are one or two who like to, out of policy, like to dual source every connection. So it does vary. I would expect, and the way that we think about it is, this will be a more competitive space, but it's still growing and it's still relatively nascent. So we don't need to win it all to be able to grow substantially from where we are now.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tom.
Alex, you did have your hand up. I don't know if you have a question.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, guys. Just two probably for Rob. Firstly, we saw another uptick in gross margin. What was the driver of that, and is it sustainable going forward? I think it was above 99% this time. And I noticed you've added a free cash flow disclosure to your presentation. What do we see as the sort of structural cash conversion rate going forward based on that metric? Thank you.
Thanks. In terms of gross margin, we include in gross margin things like we buy text messages in large bulk so that we can notify people when payments have gone against their account. The cost of doing that have fallen. In H2, they remain at those levels. So we don't expect those currently to rise back up. So I do think the gross margin will remain at or about where you saw it for the first half. In terms of free cash flow, we have published the H1 numbers, obviously, for this presentation. We do, as a business, in terms of revenue and other things, we do have seasonality with the holiday season, with Singles Day, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and a variety of things. Game releases lead to H2 seasonality. So I do think that H2 will bring an uptick in the free cash flow generation. So keen to see where the full year ends and update you then, Alex.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Alex. Does anybody else have any questions? Hannes, I see you.
Happy to ask again, roundtable style. You have not disclosed any TPV split between LPM, so the digital wallets, and account to account. Maybe you and DCB, you gave the bundled DCB number. Maybe you can just like help us a little bit, like on the digital wallets. Maybe weaved in if you have already seen some account to account volumes. And then separately, given we talk about account to account, maybe just some progress update in regards to PIX and UPI. That would be also great.
Let me answer the second one first. So PIX, so we have a license in both India and Brazil. I would say in Brazil, we are gearing up for a early Q2 next year launch. We have a number of our existing merchants who are interested in working with us in Brazil. I think it's taken a bit longer than any of us had expected. There's a bit of a shifting landscape on the regulatory side, and there's also some well-documented sort of challenges on PIX on the security level, which means the central bank has been extremely tight on, you know, granting new licenses and administering those licenses. And so, you know, the good news is we're going with a fully licensed regulated model in Brazil early part of Q2 next year. So that's very exciting. India is somewhat more problematic in that we got granted the license, but there was some debate around whether that license could be used domestically or in a cross-border sense. Our interest is primarily cross-border. Yeah, so more work to do in India just to figure out how big that could be. But I guess what I would see is the potential for our UPI license is in cross-border commerce, companies wishing to sell in India without having to put boots on the ground and infrastructure in the actual market. And then the other question on TPV.
Yeah, Hannes, as you correctly point out, we don't disclose the split. I mean, in broad terms, TPVs generate higher returns for the wallets. And so, although at this stage, those TPVs are lower, but the business is growing, so they will continue to increase. DCB TPVs continue to grow. So we haven't got that split out today, perhaps for the Capital Markets Day, Hannes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hannes. Tom?
Sorry, just a quick one building on that one. I mean, PIX obviously can be a big event when that launches. Do you think the cyber incident could cause a rethink by regulators? And there's quite a few licenses out there. Was there a couple of bad actors that maybe got, you know, early access that could be turfed out and maybe open up more of the market for you in the long term? Or is that something you haven't seen just yet?
I think, I don't know, is the honest answer. I think what it does say to us is that our approach of going in a licensed, you know, robust kind of way, compliant way, is the right way to go about it. I know others in our space sometimes move quickly, but they move quickly without necessarily having all of the licenses and bells and whistles in place, and that's just not something we're willing to do. So there is a high cost to building infrastructure with licenses that you then have to maintain and be compliant with, but that also in time will become a barrier to entry and part of our moat. So it just says to me that we're doing it the right way by going in with a fully regulated version of PIX for our customers.
Thank you. Any further questions from anybody?
Yeah, if I may, if that's okay.
Of course.
Hi there, chaps. It's Harry at Singers. Just a question about your digital wallets and your sort of customer relationships. I was just thinking about how you're thinking about that now and going forward, such to strengthen your relationships. Appreciate that that's going to be buoyed by the fact that you're driving increasing volumes, but with the sort of consideration of Tom's point about sort of dual sourcing of payment vendors or sort of potential partnerships down the road, just interested in how you're thinking about really driving sort of improving the strength of your relationships such that you can fully maximize, you know, the growth and that avenue that those relationships offer.
Yeah, look, it's clearly top of mind, Harry, and I think, you know, how we win in the existing customer base will be one section of our CME coming up. You know, and it's about how can you add value beyond just the plumbing, right? So clearly you've got to do the basics very, very well. And then it's what else have you got, you know, that can keep customers interested and can differentiate your proposition from somebody else's. And I won't, you know, divulge some of that content here and now, but we will go into some of that detail at the CME. But it's very much two parts to it. One is we've got to have a bigger customer base. You know, we've got to spread, you know, the kind of, you know, or diversify the merchant base to enable us to continue to grow. But within the existing customer base specifically, how do we add value beyond purely just the plumbing and the connectivity into the payment method? And that's what we will double click on in 2 weeks' time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any further questions? No? Well, thank you very much for everybody joining today. Thank you very much, Stuart and Rob. As always, if there are any further questions, please do not hesitate to get in touch. And apologies, slight difficulties with the technology, and my video seems to have died. But have a good rest of the day.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. See you in a couple of weeks.